From NPR, it's Latino USA. Listen to that sound. It's what so many of us hear day in and day out with our modern climate-controlled lifestyle. But this is what real nature sounds like. ¿Recuerdas? Nature can heal and revitalize you. And whether you're rural or urban, we all have access to it. My mom took me swimming in Lake Michigan during the entire time I was growing up.
This is paradise. This is the Hyde Park Riviera. And we call it our spa. This is where we come to meditate and to forget about everything that is on the other side of the drive.
Today we continue our series, Radio Nature, visiting The Point at Lake Michigan with my mom and my kids. That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. But first, this news. Imagine you're an undocumented mother living in the United States, and you are also a victim of domestic violence. Things suddenly get out of hand, and you decide to call the police for help. Then you find out that you're being arrested, and now you face deportation, and your children are in the hands of Child Protective Services. A report released last week by the Applied Research Center shows that in the first 6 months of this year, the U.S. government deported more than 46,000 parents of American-born children, U.S. citizen children. Seth Fried Wessler is a senior research associate at the Applied Research Center and the author of the report Shattered Families. He joins us in our studios to talk about what exactly happens to these children once their parents have been detained. Seth, welcome back to Latino USA.
Thanks so much for having me again.
All right, so this situation where you're a mother, you're undocumented, you have American-born children, U.S. citizen children, you are being beaten and you call the police, and then the police suddenly now are questioning you for your immigration papers, and now suddenly you're being detained. How often does this happen according to the research that you've come up with?
Well, what the Applied Research Center found was that there are currently at least 5,000 children who are stuck in the foster care system around the country and are in danger of being permanently separated from their families because their parents are undocumented or non-citizens, and they've been detained by ICE. Those families are facing extended and sometimes permanent separation as a result of the intersection of massive deportation and the child welfare system. And one of the most disturbing dynamics that we found across the country, I visited dozens of parents inside of detention centers around the country, and I heard stories about mothers who had called police to report domestic violence, and as a result, their children were placed in foster care, and they were moved into immigration detention and faced deportation.
And is this happening across the country, Seth? Is it concentrated in any area?
ARC found that there are at least 22 states, and there may be many more states where this is happening. Immigration enforcement is now expanding from the border and from the sort of Bush-era workplace raids to every local criminal justice system, every local police department and jail around the country. The Secure Communities program is now being implemented in every local jail across the country, and the Applied Research Center's research found that in places where local police enforce immigration laws, more children in the child welfare system are separated from their families.
So there is actually no existing protocol for officials to actually find out whether or not this person who they have in their detention is actually a parent of a U.S. child.
That's absolutely right. In all of the Applied Research Center's visits to six detention centers around the country, we asked parents who we met if ICE officers had asked them if they had children. And only a small handful in one of the detention centers said that they had ever been asked about whether or not they have children and whether those children are safe. We found that ICE detention centers effectively obstruct the vital lines of communication between families and the child welfare system. So when mothers and fathers are detained and children are in foster care, that family's ability to do what's necessary to come back together is essentially taken off the table.
So what needs to happen in order for this to change, in order for this to stop?
Well, first of all, both the child welfare system and the immigration enforcement system need to stop the clock on those processes so that families in this situation are not permanently separated. Many of these children should never have come to the attention of the child welfare system in the first place. So there's absolutely no question that family unity is in these children's best interest. But too often, families are held apart for extended periods, and sometimes these families are shattered permanently. Children never see their parents again. And if everything stays the same, the Applied Research Center projects that at least 15,000 more children may face a similar fate in the next 5 years.
Thank you so much, Seth, for all of your research.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Seth Fried-Wessler is a senior research associate at the Applied Research Center and author of the report Shattered Families. For more, visit us at latinousa.org, and we are back in 30 segundos. That's 30 seconds. Stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. It's time once again for our series, Radio Nature, where we look at how Latinos, immigrants, and people of color connect to nature in profound and long-lasting ways. You may have heard some of these pieces in the last few weeks on Latino USA, but the idea of Radio Nature came to me when I was back in Chicago visiting my family for a summer. I went for a run early one morning to a place we call The Point. It's a jagged protrusion of rocks into Lake Michigan. As I was running that day on the south side of Chicago, I saw diversity all around me, everyone connecting to nature in their own way. Yet the faces I saw weren't the ones you think about when you think about people connecting to nature. It's as if somehow there's an image out there of who cares about nature, and it isn't one of people of color. And that's what I wanted this series to be about. As I ran with the clear blue sky above me and the turquoise of Lake Michigan and the green of the park and the birds flying overhead, I once again felt at peace. I felt whole and centered in my life. I guess you could say it's as if nature is my religion. My connection to nature and to The Point and to Lake Michigan all came to me because of my mother. So on this special edition of Radio Nature, I'm going to take you to The Point and to the story of my mom and my kids. Now, my kids are always very excited about a week of vacation in Chicago, but they really look forward to going to swim at The Point with their grandmother.
I love it. This is paradise. This is the Hyde Park Riviera, and we call it our spa. This is where we come to meditate and to forget about everything that is on the other side of the drive.
That's the voice of my 75-year-old mom, Berta Hinojosa.
This is perfect. This is totally perfect. And with all my friends here, what else can I ask for?
My mom's spa is actually a landfill covered in the 1930s with huge limestone blocks, all part of a WPA project during the Depression. The uneven slabs, each about 6 feet long and about 3 feet high, are arranged in a series of four steps that cut down to the lake shore. And this is where people jump into the water, even though the signs here say that you shouldn't. My mom takes me to the unofficial entrance for the swimmers on the north side of The Point. It's marked with three pieces of wood. From here, the view of downtown Chicago is just breathtaking.
Well, from this side, we see the skyline. We see Chicago skyline. We see the Sears Tower. We see the Standard Oil Building, the John Hancock, the Navy Pier. We see everything. And then on clear days, we can see all across to Indiana and Michigan. But what I see here now is like sailboats. Lots of families with their kids playing in the water. I see just peace and enjoyment. Total enjoyment. Everybody's here. Everybody here is having a good time.
One of those people having a good time is Robin, but she's not a kid. She's in her late 60s.
You know, it's very challenging for someone of my age to get into the water, but somebody puts a couple of 2x4s in each year to give us something to hold on to get in. And it's hard getting down for some of us because these rocks can be 2 feet high. But if you look carefully, you can usually find yourself a step that's 16, 18 inches high. You know, you find your way down.
The uneven and often slippery boulders are part of the challenge and the joy of the point. This isn't a perfect beach with white sand. It's a raw rock beach. When the city decided it was going to cover the limestone boulders with cement so that it would be easier to get around and would be safer, there was an outcry. Of course, my mom was one of the activists that wanted to keep the point just the way it is. Now, you would think that older people like my mom would want to make this place easier to manage, but it's precisely nature's imperfections and the physical challenge nature presents to everyone at the point that makes this place so unique.
The way the rocks are here, you know, all uneven, like nature meant them to be, almost. They are not, it's not nature, but I just feel that this is such a escape from everyday chores and everyday, you know, concerns. This is peaceful.
At 75, my mom still swims at least an hour a day as often as she can, starting in the month of May and going through October. Yes, my mom swims in Lake Michigan in the month of October, and she swims for a mile. On this day in the summer, my mom jumps into Lake Michigan with her fins and her goggles, and she's off. And then my dad, usually, but today I'm with him. Well, then we just wait and wait and wait until my mom goes so far out swimming that she just becomes a tiny little speck. And then finally, after an hour, she comes back.
That's part of the beauty.
All right. So, Mom, how was your swim, Mom?
My swim was outstanding. I almost didn't want to come out. I wanted to keep on going, but I figured, you know, enough is enough. It was wonderful. The water is clear, completely clean. You can see the bottom, and it's flat, and it's the right temperature. I really could have gone forever, but I figured there has to be a limit to everything. So I'm back, and I feel great.
Why is this place important to you in terms of connecting to nature?
When I'm in the water, sometimes I have to remind myself that, you know, I cannot just go on forever because it's mesmerizing. When I'm out there and all I can hear is the shuffling of my body against the water. And it's nature, is that connection of water and body and soul that makes me so happy.
A lot of times during the summer, the water is calm and crystal clear. But today, the water is rough and the waves are crashing against the rocks. That unpredictability just adds to the beauty of Lake Michigan and to the point. And my mom's friend Robin loves that it all happens just steps from her apartment in Chicago.
I'm a nature lover that happens to live in a city because I like people too. Ever since I came to Chicago in the 60s, I've just been drawn to the lake. When I was in college, I would bring my books out here and study out here. Eventually, I started swimming out here. Often, I just come to sit, look at the lake, watch the waves splashing up on the rocks. It's just different in different seasons. In the winter, I'll come out, or I used to. I confess I don't come often in the winter, but I do come sometimes in the winter. The snow formations, the ice formations, it's just beautiful. And you know, you watch the birds flying, and the storms coming in, and it's just, to me, it makes living in Hyde Park worthwhile.
For Robin, like my mom, it's not just the connection to nature that she loves here. She also deeply loves the community of lifelong nature lovers that forms at the Point. And I really mean lifelong.
You know, earlier today, one of the people had brought cake because another person, John, had his 91st birthday, and they were celebrating his 91st birthday, which was in January. And I said, well, why are you celebrating it now? We won't all be out here in January. So, you know, we're celebrating next year's early. I said, well, why don't you celebrate last year's? She said, oh, we did that already.
Finally, I decide it's time for me to go in and swim, this time with my kids.
All right, you just got to jump in. That's all there is to it. Oh, boy.
So I just got out of the lake, and the challenge this time was for myself and my kids to swim to the buoy. And so we did, in tandem, the three of us, for the first time ever. In all of these years of people working and being part of the lake and part of the Point, what's ended up happening is that it's actually become more accessible. Not less, but more accessible for more people. And it was great. It's a great workout. I'm in awe of my mom, who can do an hour in that lake every day. In awe. But she's the one who taught me to love it.
And now I'm passing down that legacy to my kids, who grow and change and learn from nature just as I did. My daughter, Jurema, is 13 years old.
You know, when you were little, you did not like the water. You were afraid of the water, and you were afraid of swimming. And on this trip, I feel like you've really taken on, like, some of your own challenges of going out alone and going deeper. And I'm wondering about your experience with nature and Mother Nature as you challenge yourself.
It's kind of a surprise, I guess you could say. I mean, you look out, and it's, like, so much water that you could explore, but it's nice to have a place that's connected with your family, that's so, you know, fresh, and it's a memory of when I was a child, and it's, you know, let's go to the Point, you know, let's go have fun and go swimming. And, you know, I had a little rock house that I'd call my country house, even though I technically could never go into it, but it's kind of, you know, it's part of who I am and how I grew up.
And so another generation receives the connection, and someday, I hope, we'll pass it on down to the next. And for that, all I can say is, gracias, mami.
This is just, to me, this is a gift of life. It's a gift, something that I, as long as I can, I'm going to be coming here to be in contact with this water and with this sun and with these rocks. They just give me such peace of mind, and it's nothing else but it's nature. It's all around me.
We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in just 1 minute. Stay with us. No se vayan. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The Guatemala City Basurero is the largest garbage dump in Central America. But what is refuse to millions of people creates a livelihood for a caste of people on the lowest rung of society. Los guajeros, as they're called, search the garbage for cardboard, plastic, glass, and metal that they can sell for recycling. As you can imagine, their existence is pretty grim, most of all for the children of guajeros. A development project in Guatemala City called Safe Passage, Camino Seguro, is helping to save young people from the garbage dump. NPR's John Burnett has our story.
We're standing in the rain on the edge of a wide ravine in Guatemala City, into which is deposited the daily waste of more than 2 million people. Lush green slopes drop down to a valley floor covered with heaps of garbage. The stench of rot is overpowering.
The people down there are sorting through garbage that is dumped by those yellow trucks in order to find recyclables to sell in order to make a living. There are 920 of those yellow trucks, and they're each allowed to dump 3 times per day. So that averages about 2,000 tons of trash every single day being dumped here in the Guatemala City dump.
Jessica Britt gives a tour of El Basurero once a week. The 23-year-old Vermonter volunteers for an organization called Safe Passage, which we'll visit in a minute. The scene is unforgettable. Guajeros and bright rain slickers scrambling onto piles of fresh garbage and fat black vultures perched everywhere, waiting their turn. These are some of the Guatemalans who belong to the 51% of the population that lives on around $2 a day. Their workplace is regularly contaminated with raw hospital waste and toxic waste from factories.
I don't know if people know this or not, but here in Guatemala, you don't throw your toilet paper in the toilet. You throw it into the trash can. And so all of that waste comes here, meaning that these people suffer most frequently from respiratory illnesses, gastrointestinal diseases, and skin diseases. We see a lot of those coming through our clinic.
El Basurero is not a place for children. Until a few years ago, guajeros brought their babies to the dump and used cardboard boxes as cradles while their older children picked through the waste alongside parents. Today, children of guajeros have a safe place to go. While their parents toil in the dump, nearly 600 kids ages 2 to 22 come here to an educational and activity center called Camino Seguro, Safe Passage. Johnny Guzman is an 18-year-old enrolled in the program. He wears a cap with a giant dollar sign on it. Up until 3 years ago, he worked beside his father in the dump.
Muy peligroso.
¿Qué son los peligros?
It's very dangerous, he says. People get buried in garbage. They get crushed under machinery. There have been lots of deaths down there. A friend of mine was scavenging, and he didn't see the bulldozer, and he fell under the tracks. It was tragic. Kimberly Rodriguez is a pretty 16-year-old in a red sweater with an irrepressible laugh.
You have to put up with rain, sun, and bad odors. You get filthy, there are rats, there are maggots, lots of little animals. We go there because we have no other work. I wouldn't be studying if it weren't for the project because my mom can't afford to send me to school. Thanks to Camino Seguro, me and my brothers are getting ahead. I plan to go to the university and study psychology.
Safe Passage has learned what the best development projects have learned. You cannot just educate poor, at-risk kids and expect to change their lives. You have to feed them, teach them English and computer skills, give them something to do after school, like guitar lessons and soccer teams. Then the parents notice the changes and they want to improve themselves too. So the program now offers adult literacy classes, parenting workshops, and membership in a women's jewelry-making co-op. And for the little ones, a bright, welcoming early childhood education center. In some respects, conditions have improved at the dump since it caught fire in 2005 in a massive conflagration. After the fire was extinguished, the municipality, which manages the landfill, fenced off the 40-acre dump, instituted permits for all guajeros, began shutting the gates at dusk every day, and most importantly, it banned all children. Camino Seguro was begun in 1999 by a young woman from Maine named Hanley Denning. She came to Guatemala to learn Spanish and was so shocked by working conditions at the dump that she decided to do something about it. She tragically died in a car accident 4 years ago. Safe Passage has grown into one of the most successful community development projects in the country. With donors from the U.S., Canada, Europe, and Guatemala, Camino Seguro employs about 100 Guatemalans who help more than 500 families that live in the slums surrounding the sprawling dump. Oscar Alfaro Godoy is a 31-year-old social worker with Camino Seguro who works with families here in the 14 de Octubre barrio.
They work and live with what we throw away. Automatically, they assume a very, very low status. So when we begin community development projects, we always focus on self-esteem. After all, they're recycling cardboard, plastic, and glass and selling it to big companies. The work these people are doing is very important.
Les demostras que su trabajo es muy, muy, muy importante para eso.
Godoy walks down a narrow set of stairs where he's greeted by a heavy-set woman with an incandescent smile. Irma Chiquito is the mother of four girls, and she's a born-again Christian. Every day she goes down into the ravine to pick through the waste.
Every time I go, I ask God to protect me from all the dangers, the tractors, the avalanches of garbage, the sharp glass.
Chiquito lives in a small cinder block house donated by a missionary group. Big sacks of empty plastic jugs sit ready to resell. Guajeros don't search only for materials to recycle. On certain days, garbage trucks come from McDonald's and Pollo Campero, bringing hamburgers and fried chicken that's never been touched. The scavengers eat it on the spot, bring it home for their families, and sell it in the community. Doña Irma says they used to be able to reclaim meat and vegetables thrown out by the Pais supermarkets.
But the bad news is they don't want us to take their clean food home anymore, so they throw soap on it so we can't eat it or resell it.
Doña Irma's father worked in the basurero. Now she does. But she has vowed that her four daughters will not follow her. Teenagers Clara and Heidi, who are enrolled at Camino Seguro, sit on their beds and listen to the interview quietly.
I don't want them working in the garbage dump. I told them, keep studying. What I do, it's too dangerous. Every day I go, I never know if I'll return.
Salimos hoy y llegamos, pero no sabemos si vamos a regresar.
For Latino USA, I'm John Burnett in Guatemala City.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Funding for Latino USA is provided in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, supporting families leading change.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the American Jewish World Service, supporting local solutions to global challenges at ajws.org, and Lumber Liquidators, offering a variety of sustainably harvested flooring, including pre-finished and stained, at lumberliquidators.com, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. This is NPR.